Welcome to the HR Room Podcast, the podcast series from Insight HR, where we talk to business leaders from around Ireland and share their advice on how to create the HR systems and workplace culture that's right for your business. For show notes and bonus content, simply visit www.insighthr.ie/podcast. And remember, if you need any HR support, get in touch with us at Insight HR. Whether it's conducting a complex workplace investigation, filling a gap by providing you with a virtual or on-site HR resource, or providing advice via our HR support line, we'll help you resolve whatever human resources challenge your business is facing. Okay, let's get started.
Hi all, and welcome to the second episode in our two-part series on unfair dismissals. In our last episode, we discussed some steps that HR can take to help prevent a claim of unfair dismissal, so catch it now if you haven't done already. And today we'll be discussing the steps you should take when such a claim lands on your doorstep. Who better to join us than Mary Cullen, Founder and Managing Director of Insight HR, and Liam Barton, Senior HR Consultant in the business. Hi guys.
Good morning, Sarah.
Liam, in our last episode, we covered some of the ways that employers can mitigate the risk of being brought up for unfair dismissal. But let's say that the worst happens and you find out that an employee is bringing a case against you. As a HR professional, what should be the very first thing that you do?
Well, I think as a HR manager, typically you won't be surprised, Sarah, is the first thing I'd say. I think as a HR manager, if you end up dismissing someone, you've gone through a thought process and a risk analysis, and you've come to your final decision after a lot of thought and energy, I'm sure. One of the first things I do is look at the steps that you've taken in terms of effecting the dismissal. I would take the appropriate legal advice. So if someone is bringing forward a claim to the Workplace Relations Commission, you do have generally some time. And typically with COVID now, there's going to be a further delay in hearings taking place. So you do have a time to look at your case, look at the steps you've put in place, what procedurally you've done, and maybe take advice from an employment law solicitor in relation to exactly what exposure is there. So based on the dismissal taking place and based on the person bringing a claim, you may have a different strategy. So for instance, if the dismissal was based on theft within the business and you've implemented a fully comprehensive workplace investigation and you've concluded that the person breached internal policy and theft did take place, you may decide to defend the claim because you may be satisfied based on what work you've done that the dismissal is legitimate and fair and that you feel it's appropriate to defend the claim. You should be aware that with recent changes in relation to the WRC, it's quite likely that it may end up in the public domain. And with recent changes in relation to the constitutionality of the WRC, it's possible that more and more hearings will be in public. So it won't be unlikely or shouldn't come as a surprise that journalists or, you know, media protagonists may decide to visit. So from that point of view, I would go through step by step the steps you've taken, look at any exposure or gaps in terms of your paperwork or procedures, take advice and support, and in line with your managing director or general manager, identify the exposure and come up with a strategy. Within the WRC, there is a mediation support service, so you may wish to engage with that. That's a very, very good service. You may be open to mediation. It's always possible to settle the claim either on the date of the hearing or prior to the hearing. In my experience, the earlier the intervention, prior to the date of the hearing, the less costly it is, i.e. letting it run all the way to the date of the hearing will inevitably push up the price of a settlement in my experience. So I think it's a case of not being surprised, taking stock, analysing what you've done and coming up with the appropriate strategy to deal with the claim.
And Mary, do you think that when it comes to a claim of unfair dismissal, that it's kind of a case of shutting the stable door after the horse has bolted?
Not really, Sarah. You know, I guess in many ways, you know, as Liam says, when the organization or HR are dealing with a disciplinary process. They will be following their own policies and procedures, and they ought to be very carefully documenting every step of the process, so that in the event they find themselves at the WRC, that they're able to defend their claim with a robust set of documents. Anyone can take a claim for unfair dismissal. It doesn't mean that the organisation has done wrong simply because they an ex-employee has chosen to do so. So I think it's important when, you know, you get those notifications from the WRC or a solicitor writes to you post the termination of an employee's employment with the company, that you don't panic. You know, it's not a surprise, as Liam says. Many people object to their dismissal and often are looking for loopholes in the approach taken by the employer. So when you get to the WRC, they're going to look at the reasonableness of the employer's actions on two grounds, and that's going to be on the grounds of procedure, whether you have followed appropriate and fair procedures, and they're also going to look on the substantive issue. Was the sanction of dismissal fair in the circumstances? Or could you have considered alternative sanctions which were less severe? So the employer always has to be aware of the magnitude of their decision and consider all of the options open to them before they consider a dismissal. As Liam says, that risk assessment is really important to consider what you're doing and why you're doing it.
And I think, Sarah, just to take up Mary's point, increasingly, where an employer is potentially dismissing someone on the grounds of gross misconduct, and they're dismissing them for a single incident or single aspect of work that may or may not have taken place, the bar is quite high in terms of, I suppose, proportionality. So if a single incident has taken place where the employer is relying wholly and entirely on that single incident to dismiss an employee, I think they need to be very, very clear that the single incident in of itself was enough to render the employment relationship void. So if the employer is ultimately taking the ultimate sanction against the employee of dismissing them and terminating them from their employment, and the potential ramifications from an income point of view for that particular employee and their family, they need to be absolutely sure regarding that single incident. And as Mary said, from a procedural point of view, from a fairness point of view, and in my experience at Insight HR, I would typically get calls in. We never tend to get a call in which says, I'm thinking of giving the employee, a chastising conversation or a verbal warning. We typically get a conversation, is this a dismissible offence? And so I find it quite interesting. In my experience, I'd be interested to hear Mary's, that we seem to move from the starting point right to the very end very, very quickly. And there's no thought intermediary. And I think increasingly the WRC would ask employers to consider, okay, well, look, albeit that this was a very unfortunate incident, albeit that you were very upset over what occurred, would you not have considered a final written warning with training and supervision and monitoring as a way to maintain this person in employment? So I think that's something that every employer should consider, particularly if it's a single incident or gross misconduct dismissal.
Yeah, and I think, Liam, you know, HR do make mistakes. Management do make mistakes when it comes to disciplinary processes. You know, probably the biggest mistake that we see, will be around following their own internal procedures. So typically if you're, reviewing or considering taking disciplinary action against someone because of a gross misconduct issue, have you carried out an investigation? Have you carried out a fair disciplinary process? Have you considered people's rights and entitlements, you know, and offered them representation? Have you clearly outlined the case against them? Have you done that in writing? Have you given the person an opportunity to respond? Have you given reasonable time to consider your decision? I'm not a big fan of having a hearing and 15 or 20 minutes later walking back into the room and terminating someone's employment, because really, what consideration have you given to the set of circumstances that are in front of you? Even if you have carried out a thorough investigation, even if you have given the employee an opportunity to respond. So I think there are some of the kind of mistakes that we see happening, even in well-established HR departments when it comes to gross misconduct in particular.
So just to clarify, and this is really just for my own understanding, I mean, if an employee has been found guilty of, you know, fraud or theft or something like that, and they've been dismissed, like, they could still bring a case and be a successful case against their employer, even if they were guilty of the fact and it was found that, if the procedures hadn't been followed fairly.
Absolutely.
That's correct, yeah.
Well.
Yeah, so, and there have been a number of, I suppose, quite high-profile cases, Sarah, where, you know, the person has admitted theft or admitted wrongdoing or admitted non-compliance with procedures, but they have successfully sued on the basis of non-adherence or non-correct use of procedures. I think famously there was a case in Dublin. I think it involved a lorry driver, and he was repeatedly warned regarding safe procedures and safe driving at work, and unfortunately, he was driving, and you know the low bridges, the bridges that have a certain level in terms of the meters, he was driving, and unfortunately he did significant damage to the bridge. And he had been repeatedly warned and written in writing in terms of the safe carrying of loads, and he had been instructed and trained to the nth degree. And when he arrived back into the yard, Sarah, there was no disciplinary procedure. There was no written invite to the disciplinary procedure or the right to representation or due process. He was told in rather robust language, shall we say, that he was not to return to the workplace, and that was the end of his employment. And I think he sued successfully for in the region of about €4,000, because the WRC found that while he had contributed by his negligence to his own dismissal, they found that fair procedures hadn't been applied. So that was one example where there was, I suppose you might say, an incident that resulted in gross misconduct, but fair procedures were not applied.
Liam, I have to say you're a great man for case law. Do you have an example of the impact that a case of unfair dismissal can have on a business?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think when we talk about unfair dismissals, I suppose that there's a number of levels. I think the first thing I talk about, Sarah, is the cost impact. And particularly if we think about businesses and how they function, they have revenues, they have fixed costs in terms of salaries, they have variable costs in terms of insurance, etc. Typically, most organizations won't accrue or have a nominated amount every year in terms of, okay, we're going to put 50,000 a year aside for unfair dismissals, because they don't think that an unfair dismissal claim will arise. So I think typically if you have an unfair dismissal and there's an award and there's legal fees and HR costs, very often it's something that comes up out of the blue, or it can come up out of the blue. And from a financial point of view, it can have quite a significant impact on your bottom line. And the example which I was given one time in human resources and employment laws, if the cost of the process or the claim is €30,000 in terms of, you know, the cost of the award and legal fees and HR fees and ancillary fees, you know, if your net margin is 10%, you really have to generate an additional €300,000 in sales and turnover just to make up for that particular award. And that's about the real financial cost to businesses in terms of an unfair dismissal. I think a sunk cost or a kind of hidden cost is the mental headspace and concentration that it takes on behalf of a general manager or a HR department or a management team to put together a set of minutes, to remember what happened at a meeting 9 months ago, to go through the process to present themselves at the WRC. Because if the general manager or the sales manager or financial controller or HR department are concentrating and working in terms of the minutes and why it was necessary to dismiss, their time and energy is taken away from the job of running the business or running the HR department, etc. So from a financial point of view, it has a huge impact. From a sort of business point of view, it has a massive impact in terms of taking the focus and concentration of the management team away from running the business to dealing with one specific issue. And in our earlier podcasts, Mary and myself would always be of the view that you try, where possible, if there is a termination, to have it on an agreed basis that the person departs with their reputation intact, with a legal waiver and agreement, so that both parties, the employer and the employee, can go their separate ways on an agreed basis, and there's a full and final settlement. And I would always encourage HR departments and line managers and senior management teams to consider the impact of not having that in place. Because very often people say, well, I'm not paying X amount on top of X, Y amount. I say, well, it's not a zero cost. There is a cost to you having to run that claim for the next 6 to 8 months of the sales manager having to attend the WRC, because if he's attending the WRC, he will not be generating fee income and sales, et cetera, et cetera. So I'd ask organizations to consider both almost the above the line cost in terms of the real impact financially on the business, but also the below the cost point in terms of, the mental headspace and the energy it takes in terms of defending an unfair dismissal claim. It's quite significant.
Yeah, I'd also say, Liam, it's the small little things that you see HR being caught out on. Yeah. And sometimes I just feel really sorry for the HR manager or people involved in a disciplinary process when, the way in which they've recorded a minute is thrown out and the barrister is cross-examining them based on something they've written or a way in which they presented something or not presented something or departed from their own policies and procedures or made a decision that, somebody is trying to make a case has been unfair. And it can be horrendously stressful for the individuals involved. Even though when you get to the WRC, it's not a typical courtroom scenario. However, in my experience, unless you're an experienced IR person who's used to being in the WRC or the Labour Court, the whole process can be quite intimidating. And you want to be walking into that room clear that your paperwork is meticulous. And it's one of the things that, I take pleasure in because, myself and Liam find ourselves in the WRC, there on behalf of our client, sometimes looking at their paperwork or if we're involved in an investigation or something like that. And it always gives me pleasure when I get feedback from the solicitor or a barrister to say, look, your paperwork is meticulous. Horror of horrors if it wasn't. And that's something you did within HR costs the organization money. And I think a lot of HR professionals lose sleep over those kind of things. It might seem simple, but in reality, if you're not 100% sure about what you're doing, you really do need support and advice all the way through the process.
Yeah, Marian, just to take up that point, I think sometimes what happens in those instances, is that within our organizations, there's a level of pressure almost applied to the HR practitioner or the HR manager or business partner to say, well, look, from the line manager, I understand, but I really want to get this individual out of the organization. And I think in that instance, the HR department has to be very strong and say, well, look, we can work together possibly to achieve that goal, but it has to be on the basis of correct procedures being applied to defend any potential claim. And I think sometimes some HR departments feel the pressure, and they need to be very strong in that instance to actually stick to the procedure and make sure that they stick. Because as you say, Mary, any employment law solicitor, any employment law barrister, when you're in the WRC, that is not the place you want to have cut corners. You want to make sure that your paperwork is absolutely meticulous and that you've applied the correct procedures and you've done things fairly and reasonably and given time to the process.
Yeah, and also, you know, in real terms, if you're prejudging the outcome of a disciplinary process, you know, because someone somewhere within the organization has applied pressure to a manager or the HR function to reach a particular outcome, it's in those scenarios that, you know, people tend to take the claims against the company, because if it's excessive, if the sanction of dismissal is excessive, or people feel they have been treated badly throughout a process, then they're far more likely to lodge a claim against the company than if you treat people well and fairly and with dignity and respect. And I can't say that enough when it comes to dealing with disciplinary matters. You know, HR have an obligation, I guess, to always, always treat people professionally and with dignity and respect. And sometimes I do see that's missing in a process. For instance, if you have HR involved in bringing an individual into a room and outlining disciplinary issues to them and giving that person the choice of, we can do this the nice way or the hard way, and that still goes on, that person is likely to seek advice. And you are really in quite a lot of trouble when you get to the WRC, because you have prejudged the outcome right at the very start and indicated very clear to that person, very clearly to that person, that they have no future in your organization. So I would always, always be wary of making that kind of a statement to anyone. I don't care how senior they are in the organization. It's not a wise approach.
So guys, thanks so much for that. That's really all we have time for with this episode, I'm afraid. But before we completely wrap up, I just want to kind of go over some of the key points that I got. So I've got three key points here that I took from today's episode on how to deal with a claim of unfair dismissal. The first point that I want to make is that HR managers shouldn't panic. This shouldn't be necessarily a surprise. Anyone can object to being dismissed, whether or not those claims are actually founded. Just really don't panic in the first instance. The second takeaway that I have is that if you do get a claim of unfair dismissal and you're not panicking, that's great. But the first thing that you should do then is to really look thoroughly at all the steps that have been taken in terms of what you've done to affect the dismissal and what procedures were followed. And then you should always get advice from like an employment law solicitor. Remember too, that it could be in the public domain. So you might need to chat with somebody in PR and something like that. And take any advice and support that you can get, really. Also have a choice of whether you wish to defend the claim or whether you wish to settle the claim. And the earlier the intervention, the less costly that settling a claim could be, usually anyway. And that brings me to my third point, which is the cost impact of unfair dismissals. It's not just all about the award. It's about the costs of actually putting together a case for defence and engaging the help of third parties. They're all kind of hidden costs when it comes to a case of unfair dismissals. And that's kind of it for me then. Guys, do you think that that's encapsulated everything we've discussed.
Excellent, Sarah. Absolutely, spot Sarah. On again. Yep.
I'm always so relieved when you say that. Okay, brilliant. Well, guys, thanks so much for joining us today. And thank you, Mary and Liam, for the episode.
Thanks, Sarah.
Thanks for joining us today on the HR Room Podcast, the podcast series from Insight HR that helps you create the human resources systems and workplace culture that's right for your business. For show notes and bonus content, go to www.insighthr.ie/podcast. That's www.insighthr.ie/podcast. We'd love it if you subscribe, like, and share the show with any friends and colleagues who are looking for fresh ideas on how to create the ideal workplace for their business. And remember, if you need any HR support, get in touch with us at Insight HR. Whether it's conducting a complex workplace investigation, filling a gap by providing you with a virtual or an on-site HR resource, or providing advice via our HR support line, we'll help you resolve whatever human resources challenge your business is facing. Thanks, and see you soon.